If you are new or listening online, my name is Matt, and I get the joy of being the priest in this community. Our whole vision at Unlimited is to do two things really well. We want to be a family, a multi-generational family that goes all out for the unreached youth of the city, that loves them, cares for them, and like beautifully and wonderfully shows them who Jesus is and how they can live their best lives in and through him. And secondly, we want to be a multi-generational family that sees miracles everywhere. I've been saying it for the last year, we want to see the miraculous and the mundane, but a lot of people say to me like, Matt, what does that actually mean? And I'm kind of not rebranding it, but maybe rephrasing it as seeing miracles everywhere. Like wherever you find yourself, my prayer every day is that you would see miracles everywhere in that. And so that is who we are. And that's where we're going. We're in Holy Week at the moment. And the Holy Week is the week that we look at Jesus' sort of entry into Jerusalem. I'll talk about in a moment. The Last Supper, the betrayal of Jesus, and then Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. And I was in St. Luke's school this week. Love St. Luke's school. I was there this week and I was doing an assembly. And I said like to the kids, it was a trick question because I had some cream eggs. And you know, like if you have a cream egg, they often give you the right answer, right? And I was like, what does Easter mean to you? And everyone was like, Jesus! I was like, oh, I was hoping you'd say chocolate or something and like I could give out a few. But we jumped straight there and I stood up and I was like, come on, kids, like, what is it about? And this one kid just stood up and just was like, it's about Jesus. And I was like, I wish I had faith like that when I was, you know, like in school. And this week, we're looking at who Jesus really is. What's his purpose? And people often say to me, like, Matt, what is the purpose of Jesus? Like, I get we need God. Like, God's really great. I love God. Like, you know, it's really cool that we had the Father. Like, but what is the purpose of Jesus? And often liken Jesus to a bit like the show Love is Blind. Anyone see Love is Blind in here? Love is Blind is this show where they get a bunch of contestants that fall in love with each other behind closed doors. They're in these weird little pod things, and they basically, it's like old school dating. Imagine like dating in the 80s, where you'd like have to ring somebody and chat to them on the phone, and like woo them with words rather than just your beautiful looks. And so they like have this like amazing time of meeting, and they chat, and they kind of, and then in the end they get together and they realize, do we fancy each other? Do we want to be together? And this whole point of the whole premise is like, love is blind. Like, you know, like you can love someone. And I like it a bit to that, because before Jesus, what we had is we had God of the Old Testament who loved people, wooed people, conversed with people, cared for people, did business with people, set up covenantal relationships with people. But they like only a couple of people had seen God face to face. And so the purpose of Jesus was that he would become God made visible. Like if you want to see who God is, Jesus is your answer. If you want to see what makes God cry, if you want to see what God makes laugh, if you want to see him, you know, what breaks his heart, if you want to see the way he acts towards people, like the answer is look at the life of Jesus. Look at how he loves and cares and acts and operates. This is who we see like Jesus is. Jesus is the man who is God, the God who is man, the God who is incarnate into human flesh and blood. And therefore, like this week is fascinating because we see a God who dies, a God who is betrayed, a God who sacrifices himself. And it started last week with Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday is this fascinating event where Jesus rides into Jerusalem as a king. And, Jesus, he comes and he rides in as a king on the back of this donkey. And it's fascinating because in the moment, what's happening is people are taking off their shirts and taking off their jackets. And I've lost my microphones. And they are laying them down. And they're laying them down at the feet of Jesus. And what we see is this moment. I've lost both these. And we see this moment where people take off their jackets and they lay them down at Jesus' feet. And Jesus is riding over on a donkey, riding in like a king. And people are cutting down palm branches and they're laying them at Jesus' feet. And this was a way of declaring politically and kind of religiously, like, this is a person that we align ourselves to. Like, if you read in the book of Acts, when Stephen is martyred, when he is stoned to death, what they do is they lay their feet, their jackets, their overalls at the feet of Saul, you know, Paul, and then they lay them there to say, like, we recommend this. And so what this was a moment of like of reckoning. It's a moment of homecoming. It's a moment of like saying, like, we worship this person. We kind of politically back this person. It's a bit like, I don't know whether you follow football or the Chiefs, but imagine the Chiefs or Exeter City, like they bought themselves a new captain. Yeah, bought the player that was like the most ridiculous player that everyone knew was going to be the new captain. And the first game of the match, people took off their jerseys in the tunnel, you know, as they're coming out, and they laid them down so this new captain could like strut out along the shirts as if to say, like, this guy is going to do it for us. This guy is going to be the one who leads us to success. Or imagine, like, you know, hopefully we're going to get a new PM. I don't want to be political here. Hopefully we'll get a new PM in a few months' time. And, you know, and hopefully, like, you know, like, things will change. But it's a bit like, you know, when the new PM gets out of that beautiful Jaguar, you know, that Jaguar they pull up to Downing Street in, and, you know, like, imagine in that moment if all the other MPs took off their jackets, took off their ties, and they laid them and made a path from the beautiful Jaguar all the way up to the front of number 10, you know, to say, like, we think this person, you know, we think he or she is going to, like, lead us into success, lead us as a country. It's a bit like that moment. It's a bit like this for Jesus. Like, people are laying down their jackets as he rides into Jerusalem, saying, like, this person is going to be the king that we longed for. N.T. Wright, brilliant theologian and bishop of the Church of England, he said this: within his own time and culture, Jesus riding on a donkey over the Mount of Olives, across the Kidron Valley, and up to the temple, spoke more powerfully than words could have done to his royal claim. The allusion to Zechariah is obvious. The so-called triumphant entry is thus clearly messianic. Like, this is such a clear sign that Jesus is the king who has come to reign. That Jesus isn't just a human king born of human origins. This was, you know, like recalling an ancient victory, the Maccabean revolt. Like, Jesus isn't going to come in like the olden days, but he is coming in as a king from heaven. And so he rides in. People lay down their cloaks, they lay down their jackets as a sign of, a symbol of, like, we love you, Jesus. Of a sign of allegiance. And then we hit Maundy Thursday. Yeah, for the week, there's not much recorded about this week, but you kind of assume that Jesus has been healing and loving and restoring and renewing and, you know, doing the things that only Jesus can do, meeting people, loving people. And then we kind of see the end of this, the middle of this week, sorry, we see Jesus come into Jerusalem as a king. We see Maundy Thursday that I talked about last week, where Jesus says, he looks at his disciples as he's having a meal. He looks at them really intently and says, one of you is going to betray me. One of you is going to betray me. And they all look at each other and say, like, can't be me, can't be me. And then he looks at Judas and says, you know, like, Judas, Satan is entering you. Go, betray me. And Judas departs. But as he does this, you know, Jesus does something strange in the meal. He gets on his hands and knees. He takes off his outer garment and he starts washing his disciples' feet. You know, like, washing his feet. And Peter says, don't just wash my feet, but wash my head and my body as well. And Jesus talks about this moment as a moment where he is washing them clean, inside and out. And then he's arrested, brutally mocked and beaten and betrayed. He's put in front of the high priest, who questions and points fingers and, you know, like, really grills Jesus. Jesus, like, who do you say you are? And then Jesus is held overnight in a cell, taken the next morning to Pilate, first thing in the morning. And Pilate is in a tough place. Pilate's in this place, he's the governor of the land. Pilate's in a place where he keeps grilling Jesus, questioning, diving into the claims of the people around. But Jesus is there silent. It's Jesus' one opportunity to say, hang on a minute, like, this has all been a big mistake. Can I please go home to my mum and my family? But he doesn't say anything. He is quiet. And while around him, the crowd are whipped up into a frenzy by the religious folks, while Pilate is saying, Jesus, these people are saying this about you, the crowd around are shouting, crucify him! Crucify him! Crucify him! And Pilate's left in this place, but he doesn't know what to do. His wife comes and says, this man is innocent. Let him go. And so he throws out the weirdest ultimatum. It's a traditional thing that they did on the feast at the Passover, is they would offer someone on death row. And so who do you want? Do you want this man released or this man released? As sort of like a bargaining plea. And they say, release Barabbas. Release Barabbas. So Barabbas is released, and Jesus is held, and he's flogged. And, you know, like the preliminary beating to a crucifixion was so severe that it often in itself led to death. And Jesus is walked through the town with this cross on his back. He's walked to the place which is called Golgotha, meaning the place of the skull, the place that was meant to intimidate, to isolate, to depict the place that you are headed to. And so as he heads to Golgotha, the crowd shout abuse and hurl insults at him. And Hebrews beautifully puts it this way. Oh, this is Palm Sunday. It's one of my favorite paintings of Palm Sunday. Hebrews puts it this way. Such a high priest truly meets our need. One who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike other high priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day. First for his own sins, and then for the sins of his people. He has sacrificed for their sins once and for all when he offered himself. See, this is Jesus offering himself up as a sacrifice. And as he's nailed to the cross, left hanging there, one of the most brutal things about the crucifixion was that, you know, like in the movies, they're depicted as being really high up. That was true some of the time. But more often, you were crucified just a foot away from the ground. Almost like you could just take a step off the cross and you'd be free. So people would get in your face. You'd be hanging your head high. And so people would have got into Jesus' face and shouted things like, you saved others, but you can't save yourself. Jesus, I thought you were meant to be the miracle man. I thought you were meant to be God. Like, is this how God ends up? Is this really what it's about? And then he dies and is buried. And to the disciples, it's over. It's over. And we head into Saturday, the day where the disciples are mourning and lost and in pain. And there is silence from God. Silence from God. And then we reach Sunday, and the story's picked up like this. Would you click me through as I'm reading? Thank you. When the Sabbath was over, I don't know why I said that weirdly, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so they may anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way back to the tomb, and they asked each other, who will roll away the stone for the entrance of the tomb? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone was very large and had been rolled away. They entered the tomb, and they saw a young man dressed in white robes sitting to the right side, and they were alarmed. Don't be alarmed, he said. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place they laid him. But go tell the disciples, Peter and the others. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. You will see him there just as he told you. Jesus is risen. See, he is not here. He has risen. They go to lay flowers at their friend who has passed away at his grave. And they find this announcement that he is risen. Why? Why is this so important? Why is it so important that Jesus rose from the dead? It's so important that death is beaten. That as Jesus has the sin of the world cast upon him on the cross, and that he dies with it, that he is raised into new life, leaving that behind, leaving all of our junk and our rubbish and the stuff we get wrong and the wish, things we could redo and the things that we feel guilty for and sorry for. He leaves that in the grave. and is risen into the life that he promises us. This is not some just sort of show or mirage. This is the life that we get to live. Jesus' bodily resurrection is the proof that he is able to defeat darkness, that he is able to proclaim hope to the distressed, that there is life when there feels like there is no hope, when it feels like life is despairing and downtrodden and we feel disillusioned. This is not a sort of just a mere physical sign. This is the life that we get to live. This is the proof in the pudding that Jesus is the Son of God, that he does reign. It's not a merely a visual aid, but it is showing us that Jesus really is the one who was prophesied for and promised, and that he will renew the earth and lead us into the resurrection. So Jesus kind of had to come back from the dead. You know, like, his mission would have been effective if you're really distracting. I've got a little laser on here. Look, this is my ADHD kicking off. Yeah, like, Jesus had to come back from the dead. Yeah, like, arguably, the work had been finished on Good Friday. Like, if Jesus hadn't risen from the dead, we would have still been forgiven. Jesus still would have been the lamb who was slain. But rising from the dead, he shows us that he is who he says he is. He shows us the life that he wants us to live, and the way that we get to walk into it. If we say, Jesus, forgive me. Lord, let me live this life. The answer, like the guy hanging on the cross next to him, is, of course. As Jesus dies on the cross, there's a guy next to him, and this guy says, will you remember me in paradise? And Jesus' answer is not, yes, if you live a good life, yes, if you deal with this stuff, yes, if you've done that. His answer is, today you'll be with me in paradise. How do we know that claim to be true? Because Jesus descended into death and was raised into the newness of life. And that is his promise for you and I. Do you want to stand with me? We're going to pray together, and we're going to go from there.